thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 30, posting on the 16th of April, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. We have a big birthday today as we celebrate episode 30, the big 3-0 of Ireland's best business show. You know what our shtick is by now. We're here to help highlight and support any and all of our great little businesses, plus some super biggies like our pals at Smurfit. Do check out our chat with Tony Smurfit on episode 14, where he explains the importance of teams in any business. And we have some more Smurfit wannabes today. Shortly, I'll be chatting to a woman who wants to bring the mostly outsourced rag trade back home to Ireland. And wait till you hear her incredible backstory. The NDRC believes, as Team GBS does too, that Ireland can be globally great at entrepreneurship. They're here to tell us about some chunks of cash and brilliant mentors they're lining up to help your business's international success. We have another incredible entrepreneur who says she and her company won't work for any person or organization that disrespects her 53 co-workers. Hat tip to her and to them from Team GBS. And then we have a doctor in the house. Not any doctor, but a multi-award-winning nutrition expert from Dundalk, Louth, who is building a food company to keep illnesses at bay. There are 250,000 SMEs in Ireland. Over the first 29 episodes of That Great Business Show, we've interviewed just over 100 of them, so we only have 240,900 SMEs to go. But we need to hear about the best of the best. Tell us your business story. Go straight to our website, thatgreatbusinessshow.com, press the Share Your Story button, and we will do the rest. And as a heads up, we have some really posh company joining Team GBS on episode 31, but you'll have to wait until next week to see what that's all about. But if you're looking for a new export market, it is a must listen. And remember, your company or any company being on That Great Business Show is only possible because one other company, that's our super sponsor, DeFacto, makers of the world's best shaving oil, who supports us. Support them by buying the best shaving oil anyone can get at defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Here is a story for you. Our first guest started work at 7. Big banana, says you. We're up milking cows an hour before that. No. Our first guest started working at 7 years of age. And no, it's not illegal, because otherwise, she says, she would have gone insane. Before we have a chat about her business, the Linen Shirt Company, and about her ambition to bring clothes manufacturing back to Ireland, let's hear a little of Annalise Duffy's incredibly industrious backstory. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Annalise.
Conal, how are you? I tell you, I didn't sleep a wink last night out of the pure excitement about coming in to see you today. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. But the people are waiting. They need
with
to hear...
With bated breath.
They need to hear the story of a woman who started to work genuinely at 7.
Yeah.
Go on, tell us the story.
I know, unreal.
It is.
I tell you, my mum and dad were children's wear manufacturers, and they began their company the year before I was born. So I was pretty much born into it. I think my first word was probably label. So she started off working out of a workroom in the house at home.
Which is in Dublin.
In Dublin. So she started off there, and then they very quickly moved into a factory. And so from...
But sorry, just go back one further generation, because
we're going
manufacturing.
Further back as well.
Granny.
My grandmother on my father's side.
Who would have been a Granny Duffy?
Granny Fallon at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, herself and her daughter started their clothing business in the late 1940s, making underwear in Merchants Quay in Dublin. And their journey started, I suppose, much earlier than mine. So I'm third generation down now, which really excites me, because it's incredible to think that what you can use with your hands to create these garments out of nothing, I just find it miraculous.
You call it magic.
It is magic. It is magic. When I tell you the story about what it's like on my first day of the job when I was 7, I tell you, you'll believe it as well. It is absolute magic.
Well, go on, tell me.
Okay, so here we go. Well, as I said, my mum and dad had their factory, so I used to go every day after school, try my best to be sick so I could go there more often. And the girls, the machinists...
To bunk out of school is what you're saying.
Bunk out of school at seven. I started early. So I used to go after school to the factory, and my mum, was the designer. So she was always working at the cutting table or whatever which way. So I was left to kind of amuse myself. And the best way to amuse myself was around the sewing machines. So there was girls, with the seamstresses would be working away on stuff. And of course, it just... The idea of looking at these rolls of fabric being rolled out on a cutting table, and the patterns were traced around and they were cut on the cutting table. 20 minutes later, they were ferried down to the machinists, and the machinists would start magically conjuring up these items of clothing. And then an hour later, you were looking at something that you could physically put on your body in an hour. It was just amazing. To how that happens, it, to me, is still amazing. I still just find it exciting.
So you're at 7 and then you go to 11.30 or you are 11 and a half.
11 and a half, yeah. And listen, I'll be honest with you. For the first 11 years of my life, my mother spent day after day convincing me that this was no sort of a job. And I don't know what I'm thinking. Why would I want to get into such a horrible industry? It's absolutely awful. It's terrible. You have to work so hard, so many long hours for little reward, yada, yada, yada. She gave up by the time I was 11. And she said, right, okay, I'm going to get this out of your head once and for all. You can do a summer course in the Grafton Academy and learn how to pattern cut. That'll soften your cuff for you.
And the Grafton Academy, for those who don't know, is or was, is it still there? I'm not sure.
It is still there.
And it is kind of the premier or
it's
one of the...
It's a training. It's one of a training colleges for people to learn
how to... For the fashion business.
The first stepping stone into the fashion business, to learn how to make the pattern so you can make clothes. So you are supposed to be 13. So we kind of did a little bit of a fib. And because she thought, well, you're going to go in there for the first week. The course is a month. There's no way you're going to stick a month cutting patterns.
You're going in on your own.
On my own. My mother was so busy. She let me go on the bus on my own into the city centre with a roll of patterns under my arm to go and learn how to learn my trade as such. It didn't stop me. So I went there every summer until I was 15. And by that stage, after my 3 years, I was, quite accomplished pattern cutter at that stage. But that wasn't enough. I still didn't go to school. I still bunked off as much as I could. I still sewed in the factory every summer. And then at 17, then, when I finished school, I went straight into NCAD so I could learn my trade properly. Again, my mother's hope was, by the end of my four-year degree, that'll definitely soften her cough now. She'll certainly go into something else, maybe something artistic. She might decide what she's in there. She might do jewellery or something else. No, no way. They couldn't bash it out of me in there either. And here I am today.
And today you are?
Linen Shirt Company.
But you're not based in Dublin.
No, I'm not. I'm based in the best county in Ireland.
I should explain that first.
Yes.
Of all, which is the best county in Ireland?
County Kilkenny, of course.
Of course.
Of course it is.
How would I not have known that?
How would you not have known?
Why is your business based in Kilkenny?
Because I think that the whole country needs to learn how to relocate, you know, there's a place in all countries in Ireland for any business. And I think for a business like mine, it's not... you don't have to be so demographic about where you're working out of. Which kind of nearly leads me on to the other points later. We'll talk about them. But I think that there is, when you're looking at a business like mine and your end goal is to export your product, it doesn't really matter where you're based. And because of the skill set of machinists, to train them, you can train anybody in Ireland. It doesn't have to be in a centralised space because that has all finished now.
And is there a history of linen making in Kilkenny? Because I know, because Tom Murphy, the de facto boss, was talking to me during about this. I told him you were coming on.
Yeah.
And he said in Castlebar that there is a linen hall and there is a linen hall street because... Yeah. Linen was huge in Castlebar,
as
it was in Derry.
Yeah, it was in Derry. And in fact, all of the linen that I have sourced, it's all woven for me in Wexford, which is only 40 kilometres from where I am.
And that makes a sense as well.
It does, yeah, because it cuts down on the carbon footprint, I suppose, in some way as well, because it's so localised to me.
So, can you make a living out of, is it a cottage industry?
Absolutely not. Definitely, definitely not. I tell you, I'd fight with anybody who says that it is.
Let the fight begin.
I let the fight begin, exactly. No, I tell you, about a year and a half ago, going back to when I was seven, I was so in awe of the industry. I was so in awe of the women that surrounded me every day that were doing their trade, that were sewing, that they were these, as I said, these absolute magicians. That was all I ever wanted to do. And even at seven, I was saying, I will rebuild this industry back into Ireland. And I have never given up on that dream. And as the years have gone on, factories have closed. And when my grandmother was going, she had 200 staff based in Merchants Quay. And that was in the 1940s. My parents then, they had over 50 staff in the 80s. Then, you know, so over the years, there has been a huge decline over that period of time.
But there's a very good reason because others are manufacturing quicker, cheaper, and you know, the fast fashion.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are. However, if you look at today and if you look at society today and the children coming through today, which are our future, their whole ethos is towards sustainability. It's getting away from fast fashion. It's bringing it closer to home. It's bringing down that carbon footprint. It's bringing in sustainability. Unfortunately, what we have had over time is the workforce in that industry has completely depleted because there has been no factories. The factories have closed. So we're now in a position that you have to start to look towards the future. How is it possible that designers are coming out of college and they don't have the choice to manufacture in Ireland because there is no real skill set of workers to actually do this in Ireland anymore? So
there's an expression in Irish, Ixnav Guna Anasa, fighting or swimming against the waterfall.
Yeah.
Are you swimming against a waterfall, trying to bring your linen or your manufacturing or your the rag trade in general back to Ireland?
No, I'm not. Because people are starting to see things for what they are and see that it's better to buy local, whether you're buying local in England and you're supporting English rag trade people, or you're in America and you're supporting American-based companies. In Ireland, people need to be given that choice again, that they can have something. The Made in Ireland tag on your garment shouldn't be a museum piece. And it has become a museum piece. And it doesn't have to continue like that forever and a day. It can be this. I can't even put into words how passionate I am about this. It's just...
You're on the phone to me, I know.
Do you know, I know. I'm just absolutely passionate at the idea that having something that's made in Ireland, to me, every time I stitch that Made in Ireland label on the back of my shirts, I just feel so proud. And the
and
girls,
your shirts are gorgeous. I mean,
thank you.
The linen is just divine.
It's
a lovely material.
It's a beautiful material, yeah.
But it is, because of what it is, expensive.
It is expensive. And unfortunately, as I say, they are made in Ireland, but... So that's going to be a little bit more expensive than it is for, say, a linen that's made in India or a linen that's made in Portugal and it's manufactured by mass in China or India or Indonesia or whatever, and it's imported in here. Absolutely. I'm not a fool. I know I can't compete on price, but what I do have to offer is I do have a product that is made impeccably by people who absolutely love what they do. And I'm also have Irish linen that is woven impeccably by people who love what they do.
And we had a chat about this off air, is that you can't get the flax in Ireland, is that right?
Or, no, no.
But what you what is coming in is the yarn, and then it's woven here.
It's woven here, coming straight to me, and
you
we're
better
cutting
give
it
a
here
shout out to your
it.
Suppliers in Wexford. They might give you a discount. Who are they?
Go away, would you? Those lads. It's Emblem Weavers in Wexford, and in fact, their story in itself is good. They're second generation as well. Like over the years, as so many people have left this industry, and we now have the plan is that to build a training facility in my commercial setting that I can start to upskill people again in the industry. So in turn, it will give that choice to designers who are coming in behind me, younger blood who's coming in to say, hang on, I can manufacture in Ireland. Absolutely. And start to build up the momentum about this whole idea that, wow, isn't this amazing that we have this whole big manufacturing in Ireland again, that now the consumer has a choice. If I want something to that's made in Ireland, I can have that. I have that choice again. So it's to bring all of that back again is the most important thing. It's not about me building Linen Shirt Company as a brand. It's much bigger in my head than that. It's to bring back the manufacturing so that everybody has a choice of Irish brands that are made here. That's really the most important thing. So it's something, a legacy that can be given to different generations, not only mine.
And Mahatma Gandhi and maybe Nelson Mandela, they started off.
I had a dream.
One step. When are you taking your first step with this?
Well, we started working on the new Linen Shirt Company range about a year and a half ago.
And good timing in the middle of a recession.
So we started that about a year and a half ago, and it has been in development, and we launched it on our website, Linen Shirt Company, about 6 weeks ago now.
And I think that is where I saw it in the first place.
Yeah, did you see it on that first? And you
it's
did.
It's lovely. The product is just lovely.
Yeah. And the hilarious thing is I rope everybody in. Those beautiful models are my neighbours down the road. How lucky am I to have such good-looking neighbours? But yeah, so it's all in a friend of mine. He came up and he did the photography, and I have been extremely lucky that I've had people behind me who believe in the vision as well. Who, I don't know whether it's just that I'm mad as a box of frogs that I managed to convince them and tell them, listen, look, you have to support manufacturing back in Ireland. I don't know whether it's all of that, but the vision is just something that I find it so easy to get people involved in and to back the whole thing, because they can see why this is so needed now, why this is important, why people should be wanting this as an industry to happen again. And I think the timing is right.
We had Dr. John Teeling on the Great Business Show 2 weeks ago, I think, episode 27, that must be, or 28. And he has made fortunes out of whiskey and made fortunes out of gold and mining and stuff.
Sure.
He's lost a fortune in textiles.
Yeah.
Lesson learned, no?
He should have given me a ring and I would have told him to sort it out.
Who do you need, or what do you need to try to get this vision across the line?
There's a couple of things. I think I just need to bring a community with me. That's what I think I need. Because I feel that personally, I have the background. I have the skill set. I've been doing this all my life. I could tell you how old I was and you'd still say, if I bring that, that's a long time. I'm over 40 years in the business at this stage. So I would call myself a little bit seasoned at this stage. My mum is 82. She still checks all my patterns for me before they go to production. So I think to have that level of support is important. But what you also need is you also need to have the will of the government to make it happen, the will of other training programs that want to come on board, that can see this as being an entity, as something that is going, this is not just for me. This is for loads and loads of people. As you were saying earlier on about, but is this kind of not a cottage industry? That's what people think about the rag trade now. The rag trade is this cottage industry in Ireland. The rag trade wasn't always this cottage industry in Ireland. In the 1970s, 1980s, when I used to get in the car with my father, he'd do all of the selling. We would leave Dublin on a Monday morning and we would come home on a Friday evening. And every little town and village in Ireland had a children's shop. And my parents' company's label was in nearly every one of those children's shops in Ireland. And my parents' business was only one of many that were manufacturing in Ireland, be it children's wear, women's wear, men's wear, and they were all supplying retailers in Ireland.
When are you going to open your academy?
Well, we had intended to be opening it this year, but obviously...
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that was even that far ahead, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously with what has gone on, the brakes have put on slightly because always my mainstream revenue for the business was always to the retail sector. But under the current circumstances, what can you do? The retailers, their backup is up against the wall at the minute. So we've had to pivot a little bit and launch the linen shirt company online through the website instead, to just to help to brand awareness, to help to get people behind the whole concept and idea of it.
And if they are going to look at it, it's not the, it's just linen shirt company.
It says on the tin.
Every time I went looking for the linen shirt company, it gave me ones all over the world.
Okay, just, we're linen shirt company, yeah. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
And two final questions.
Yes.
One is, you said government support. Are you speaking or have you spoken to any TD or minister or anybody at all about this? EI, Leo? Anybody?
Yeah, well, Leo and Kilkenny, just a quick hello to all of those girls down there because they're just absolutely brilliant. And so they've been a brilliant help and they see the vision and see what I want to achieve. And so we're at the early stages of negotiations now at the minute and trying to get Enterprise Ireland on board. And I know that the IDA were very involved in the rag trade over years ago, but then unfortunately, as things stopped and the rag trade stopped, I suppose their focus went elsewhere. So it's really just to build that awareness again and see where we can go from there.
So if anybody is equally passionate about the rag trade, they should get in contact with you. Before we let you go,
yes,
hire in a heartbeat. That's our question. Who would you hire in a heartbeat to help you revive the rag trade single-handedly?
No brainer. It's the easiest one in the world. Nora Casey.
Nora's a good choice. Why would you say Nora?
Other than the fact that she's a seriously inspirational person, I just think that she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She's a great ambassador, I feel, for Irish business and for supporting women in business as well. And
she is that, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
And I think that certainly somebody of her caliber to bring that vision as well and getting women and people back into skilled labour and teaching them a trade that they can use and feed their families with, I think is important.
Well, I think we've given Nora fair warning that you'll be on her tail there.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're listening, Nora, give me a call.
Don't pick up the phone.
Don't pick up the phone because I'll ramble.
Finally, where will anybody find you?
Linen shirt company.ie. Yeah. And if, just the last thing, if anybody wants to hear me ramble on about the rag trade or wants some advice, they want to start something up themselves, tell them, like, they really need to get in touch with me because I'm more than happy to help. I really want the industry as a whole to succeed. So.
And we love that and we appreciate that and we salute that on Team GBS because you're now a member of Team GBS. That is Annalise Duffy of the linenshirtcompany.ie. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
on That Great Business
million.
Show.
Thank you.
That Great Business Show.
Looking for the best work-life balance? Why not start your new business life in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Údarás na Gaeltachta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, GTEC. High-speed broadband just for you. Hosail Noah Fnachlat. Your new work-life awaits. Find out more at udaras.ie.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
I had a chat with Tom Murphy, founder of our sponsor De Facto during the week, and he tells me that it's official. The government website, mywaste.ie, finally acknowledges that shaving foam cans are not for the green bin. Millions and millions and millions of them are sent to landfill here every year. And that's why he's asking Team GBS, men and women, to switch to his all-natural de facto shaving oil. Tom is on a mission to save the planet one shave at a time. Make that one small switch today. DeFactoShave.com.
Gnobio. Or That Great Business Show.
Regular listeners to the podcast will know that we try to find out what top business leaders our guests would like on their teams to help them build their enterprises. And that's why we have that little thing called Hire in a Heartbeat. So how would you like people like Mark Cummins of Pointy, Bobby Healy of Manna, Nicola McLafferty of Draper Esprit, or Cork's finest, Pat Phelan, on your team? Well, they're kind of busy doing their own stuff, but in the best traditions of business, helping business, the four I've mentioned are just a tiny number of the mentors available on programs at the NDRC, the self-styled National Startup Accelerator Program for globally ambitious entrepreneurs in Ireland. Better still, the NDRC also has cash available for companies on some of those programs. And better still, the fantastically titled Chief of Staff of the NDRC, Menno Akst, joins Team GBS now to tell That Great Business Show about the NDRC's nationwide offers. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Menno.
Hi, nice to be on here. It's a great honor to be here and talk to you today about the NDRC.
I love that title, Chief of Staff. You're not wearing any kind of epaulettes or anything like that.
And it's actually great. So I'm the Chief of Staff, but also in addition to that, I'm actually also the Head of Platform, which we can also talk a little bit more about.
You may talk about as you wish, because what you're here to tell all entrepreneurs is why they should be at the NDRC, what you're offering, and particularly because I said I would do it before I forget it. What's the up-and-coming program?
Yeah, we're applications are open for our flagship National Accelerator, and they're closing on May 2nd, Monday, May 2nd. And so that's what I'm here to talk a little bit more about. But let me first dive in, right? What is NDRC? NDRC is Ireland's National Accelerator, and it's run in a partnership between Dogpatch Labs based in Dublin, but also Republic of Work down in Cork, RDI Hub down in Kerry, and Portershed in Galway. And what we do is we help early stage startups grow. And we do that really through three ways. The first way that we do it through is we have an early stage supports program where we do weekly office hours, quarterly founder weekends, and multiple pre-accelerators each year to help founders that are just about to start their technology business figure out, is this a problem that they really need worth solving and that they should go and work on?
Must they be technology companies?
Yes, we are focused on technology startups. So like technology enabled companies. So we are focused on helping companies that are solving global problems with global solutions. What we then also do is we then have our national accelerator program, which is a 6-month program. And what we do is we do two things. One, we invest 100,000 euros in startups. But secondly...
Is that across all of them or each of them?
Across each company, we'll invest 100,000 euros.
Cash, euro?
Euro cash, up to 10 this year. And what we do is we, not only that, but we also, as you so well said in your intro, we provide them access to mentors and entrepreneurs in residence to help them solve their business. Because if you hear those names, Mark Cummins has learned so much as he was building Pointy. And Bobby the same with both Cartrawler and Manna, right? And Nicola as well over in the UK and now as an investor. Giving early stage entrepreneurs and young and up and coming entrepreneurs access to those people that know what works and what doesn't work is one of the things that you can use to prevent so many mistakes from making yourself. So that's the second thing that we do. And then the last thing that we do, which is kind of, it's very unique and we haven't seen it in a lot of other ecosystems around the world actually happening. But it's our masterclasses. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to level up the entire startup ecosystem, right? But you need to actually provide more support, more than just support to the startups. You also need to provide to all the people around it, such as the bankers, the lawyers, the Enterprise Ireland development advisors. They often want to learn more about what it means to support a really good startup. So every month we host these masterclasses that are 3 hours long on different topics that are important for all the people that are supporting the startups. So today, actually, we did one on how to be a great mentor. And last month, we did one on how to the importance of startup ecosystems. Next month, we're telling people how they can get actually involved in investing, because you hear great people like Jamie Heaslip as angel investors in all these cool companies such as Pointy, right? But like, how do you actually start? Do you need to be loaded to be doing that, or can other people do it as well? And so we're helping people become active in that.
And who can sit in on those? Say, just take the investment one if it's coming up.
Yeah, so it's open for everyone. We obviously curate the people, right? And we look at it, but you can just go to ndrc.ie and apply for it.
And it's a Zoom meeting, I presume.
Yeah, it's a Zoom meeting. Obviously, everything's virtual these days.
And so when you say you curate, are you hardly stopping people from going onto the Zoom?
No, we're not stopping people from going onto the Zoom, right? But we see, like, is this something that's applicable for you, or is there maybe another program, right, that would be more applicable for you?
How do you work out if it's applicable to somebody for investment? Are you looking at their bank account?
No, we don't look at in their bank account. What we do look more is like the best angel investors are people that have knowledge actually of that industry. And it's called what smart money. So that's,
we like smart money. We recognize smart money.
Exactly.
We want smart money.
Exactly. That's what we're looking for, because those can help the startups even grow quicker and better.
This is obviously your patch. So you know what's growing and going at the moment,
yeah,
and what's not going.
Yeah.
So what should people be looking at, and what should they absolutely avoid?
In terms of industries, do you mean?
Industry sectors, and like, I know, for example, SaaS is huge.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else is good and hot at the moment?
So, I mean, I think that artificial intelligence and machine vision, it's really of an coming of age point right now. Like the amount that it costs to process data has dropped so much over time that now we can start looking at that in multiple different assets, right? So for example, a company can now be, you can now use machine vision to see in warehouses whether people are compliant with all the guidelines that are in place or not. And all those things, that's really exciting. So make sure, like, what I always recommend to founders, right, is like, when you're building a business, tell the why now. Like, why has this massive problem not been solved before? And often it's an underlying technology that made it possible.
I take many, many newsletters every day, and I see right around the world, there's one called Axios, there's another one called TermSheet, there's other ones as well. I see companies all over the world raising vast amount of money,
yeah,
solving these problems. How do you know, say in the NDRC, that such and such a problem is not being solved by such and such a company in Japan or Singapore or somewhere?
Yeah. So that's really what we look at for our mentors. So we have over 40 highly entrepreneurial mentors deeply involved in the program. And once we get pitches and ideas from startups in, we'll actually go actively out into the market and ask, like, have you seen this solved before? Is there anyone else doing this? And if someone else is doing it, that might be okay. Like, are you going at it in a cheaper way? Are you going at it in a different way? And so we really lean on those mentors and those entrepreneurs in residence to give us some information back from what's out in the market.
One of the aims of the NDRC is to make us, Ireland, the centre of excellence, I think, for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Now, you are neither Irish, don't you think?
Yeah.
And you are certainly younger than I am. You won't know that about 30, 40 years ago, there was no enterprise in this Ireland on this island worth speaking of. It is transformed, isn't it?
Yeah, it has definitely transformed. And I think that what Ireland has been amazing and world-class at pulling foreign direct investment into Ireland. So the companies like Google, Microsoft, Facebook, that have all set up their headquarters over here. And I think Ireland had to go through that transition, right? Because these companies brought a lot of like knowledge and wealth with them that they brought over to this island. And now we're at this age where we see people that have joined when Google and Facebook were just small operations over here. They've gone through the growth with them. And they're now actually spinning out of those organizations and starting their own startups, right? And that is really exciting. And that's something that Ireland can be really good at, I think.
You know what's very exciting to a small startup? €100,000.
Yeah.
you better start talking about the 10 times 100,000 euro that may be available to them if they get onto the accelerator program.
Yeah. So we're looking right now for startups that are, that, as I said, solving global problems with global solutions, and that really have great teams at the founding, that are about to go big.
So that, now let me stop you there, because yeah, everybody who comes onto That Great Business Show who has a startup believes in it,
yeah,
are passionate about it,
yeah,
think it's going to be the greatest thing ever. How do you tell them maybe not so, that it's not going to do that?
How do you tell someone that their idea isn't great? So one of the things we always look at, right, is what do the customers of this product actually say?
If you are a pre-customer, you can't ask a customer.
No. So what we then tell people, right, is like, actually go out and see who you think would be using this product and go and ask them, like, how are you solving this problem right now? Would you be willing to pay for a solution? All those types of things are so important if you want to go and validate it. Because actually the number one reasons why startups fail is because they're either not solving a real problem or they're not solving a problem big enough.
The 100,000, back to it.
Yeah.
How do they get it?
So you go and apply at ndrc.ie/accelerator.
I presume you've made it absolutely dead easy, because people haven't got time to be filling these forms.
No, we made it super easy. It's a 10-minute application.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, it's a very quick application. And we did it on purpose, right? Because we want to quickly assess, right, like, what are the founders that we should go and be talking to and get talking to us. And that's another thing, right? Like, there's so many ways to reach out to us. Like, we have an intercom on our website that literally goes straight to all of our cell phones. We have office hours that you can hold weekly that, like, you get to go and talk to one of us. So if you're interested in this, like, come to one of our events, come to, like, go to office hours and just come and chat to us, because we want to talk to you. We want to learn more about you.
There are only 2 weeks, though, before filling in the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So how many applications do you might think you might get?
Ooh. Well, it's competitive. Let's put it that way. I hope more than 300.
Oh, wow. That's not bad.
No.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Maybe we'll be blown out of the water. So let's see.
And you better start shouting out, because to explain, NDRC was based in Dublin.
Yeah.
Republic of Workers in Cork.
Yeah.
And Portishead, you said, in Galway. Yeah. And down in Kerry,
it's RDI Hub.
And they are obviously all welcome as well.
Yeah, so we run it in partnership. This is a program that's delivered nationwide. And we did it on purpose, because we think great entrepreneurs can come from anywhere. And so that's why we decided to do it all across the country, so that when you're based down in Dingle, you can just drive up to RDI Hub and go over there and once we're in person again, right, get access to all the knowledge and network that you need to build a great startup.
We are a teeny tiny island.
Yeah.
Genuinely, do you think then, could we lead the world in entrepreneurship? There is, I want it. I love the idea.
Yeah.
But it's kind of wishful thinking.
I think that Ireland has two things that go great for them. One, it's a very welcoming ecosystem. And so if you look at it, right, the best companies that come out of Silicon Valley actually weren't started by people from Silicon Valley. And so bringing that natural hospitality that the Irish have in them, right, that makes me feel so welcome over here, is so key to attract even entrepreneurs from abroad to come over here and start up businesses over here. So yeah, I do believe that Ireland can be leading in certain things. And if you look even, right, like there are, like, Ireland is a leader in business to business software already. Like, we're punching above our weight in terms of the size of the country, definitely.
There's one big omission, though. Silicon Valley, or many, if not all, of the other big centers,
yeah,
are awash with cash. And there is not that kind of cash in Ireland.
Not yet. Not yet. I think that if you build, like, if you build it right, they'll come. And you look at the great likes of people like Shane Curran, right? They're building here from Ireland, but they've attracted some of the best investors from Index and Sequoia, right? And Excel to come and invest in his company, right? And that's great.
You should actually name check Sequoia to explain that, first of all, that they are part of NDRC.
They are.
And how huge they are in the business.
So what we have is we're really fortunate to have some amazing entrepreneurs in residence. And one of them is a guy called Mark McCabe. And Mark is Irish and he emigrated abroad to Silicon Valley about 10 years ago. And he's what's called a Sequoia Scout. And so Sequoia is probably the best and the biggest venture capital fund in the world, especially in early stage investing. And he actively recruits companies for investment for them. And so having people like Mark McCabe involved in your program, right, that will literally sit down with you up to half a day probably on helping you like raise investment and all those things, that's just key for entrepreneurs to get to. And like that's what helps them grow.
That's like gold dust, actually.
It is gold.
And other people? Not just Sequoia?
Yeah. So some other people, right, are Jules Coleman, who's actually from Leaslip, who sold a business called Hassle in the UK for £35 million. So she's one of our entrepreneurs in residence. Pat Phelan, as you said already
Pat, just follow him on Twitter.
And on Instagram these days as well. He's very active on that. We're waiting for his TikTok to start, I guess. And then also other international people. Like we have another entrepreneur in residence called Allison Kopf. She's Forbes 30 under 30, and she's building one of the most exciting ag tech businesses in the US, and she's spending time on these programs. So like this is a way for entrepreneurs to get access to so much knowledge and wisdom to help them grow their business.
So there's nothing at all to stop them joining NDRC or to try to get onto the program. Okay, you know what the next question is? Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Oh, I thought about this one for a long time, and I came to the realization as I walked through the door, and that is Bill Gates. What Bill has done is so incredible, having first revolutionized the whole like personal computer and literally having been at the footsteps of that. But now his like drive and energy to go and do this all again in sustainability. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read his book yet, but it's incredible what he talks about. So yeah, that would be the
He's got
the
some
dream.
Big thoughts, all right.
Yeah, he's very big thoughts.
Including, and I think there's a really interesting area that he's interested in, toilets. The world thing about toilets.
Yeah.
You talked earlier on about things about solving a problem. He's trying to solve a problem. And he, with all his billions, hasn't found that easy.
No. And also everything around cement, right? It's so interesting to see like the big problems that they're still at work they're solving. And so, yeah.
No end to it. Anyway, that is Menno Axt. Love the name. Menno, thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show. And we will make sure to tell everybody to try to get onto that NDRC program.
Super. Thank you.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
That Great Business Show.
I just love this next story, and you'll understand, I hope, why in a second. You'll hear the name Paula Fitzsimons often on That Great Business Show. She's the one-woman powerhouse behind an Enterprise Ireland-backed program called Going for Growth. We've mentioned it a few times. She also does lots more, but that's the one we're concentrating on today. Going for Growth is aimed at women entrepreneurs, or probably women who have never even considered themselves entrepreneurs, but who might like to be that one day. The Going for Growth program can be utterly transformative. So while you hear this story, Emma McLean of McLean Cleaning Services, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Hello, Connell, and thank you very much for having me.
Where will we start?
Well, I don't know whether you want to start at the beginning or...
It's always a very good place to start.
Don't get me starting to sing now because we may not get any further. Yeah, well, I kind of fell into being into business. I didn't necessarily go down the traditional route. It was probably through necessity that I started up my own business.
Because?
Because my husband, who worked in construction, he was put on a 3-day week just coming to the end of the recession. Things were kind of difficult. We had three young children, so I knew we needed some extra cash. So I started working for a contract cleaning company. And I started working in a financial business for this cleaning company. Now, I have to say, the business that I went to work for, they were excellent. They were fantastic. But the company themselves that I was working for, I didn't really know them. I didn't know the management team. I didn't feel like part of their team. But anyway, I went in and I did a good job, as the best job I could. And they were amalgamating at the time, and I was facilitating their, like, they were having lunches and dinners and I was getting the teas.
But you've moved on now from cleaning.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, back then, you just weren't just cleaning. You saw an opportunity.
Oh, no, I started to, yeah. I started to facilitate meetings and getting the lunches in and arranging, facilitating everything for this guy. So he actually said to me, look, Emma, I think it would be great if you set up as a sole trader and we took you on and you could get a couple of staff together and you could work in our different businesses all around Dublin City. So I did think he was a bit crazy and I kind of said, right, I'll go home and I'll think about it. So I went home and I was kind of like, what's a sole trader? What would I be doing? How would I get myself set up? And I talked to my sister-in-law, who is an accountant, and she explained a bit about it. I had a chat with my husband and I just decided, sure, look, I'll go for it. Sure, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I took on two staff and we worked in this client's business. And then I quickly realised that I would need a lot more clients to make this a viable business. And I quickly realised I loved it. I actually loved what I was doing. And I wanted to have a cleaning business where my staff had a great sense of team and they really knew who was behind them and they knew they had support, which I didn't have when I started. So even though I'd have staff in different areas, I would like them to feel part of a team. So that was huge for me to get started. Then I ended up with 20 staff. We were, like, I was advertising and we were kind of going to all different businesses, offices. We were even doing domestic clients. And we kind of went from the two staff and myself to 20. And I applied for Paula Fitzsimons Going for Growth.
Now, and who or what or how or why did you choose that one?
Well, it chose me kind of because I was at a Fingal Women in Business Day and I met a girl called Bevan Mann. And she...
Who has been on that great business show.
Oh, great. Well, Bevan, who's a great supporter of mine and I of hers, she just heard my story at that show. And she came over to me at the end of the day and just said, look, Emma, would you be interested in applying for this? I did it and it was brilliant. It was really last minute because the applications were to be in that day.
Okay.
So I was on my way home. I was driving home and I was thinking, will I go home or will I go back to the office and apply for this? Sure, why would I? I mean, I'm not an entrepreneur. This is for entrepreneurs. And I didn't see myself as an entrepreneur. So I said, look, do you know what? Turn the car. And I drove to the office and I stayed there.
What made you turn the car? Because that's the important part.
I think it was the fact that Bevan even saw something in me that day that made her think that this would be a good route for me to go down. So I went in and you have to explain your journey to where you are and where you're hoping to go. So it made me reflect on what I'd done over the few years prior and where was I going to head. And I think it made me kind of go, well, actually, I think I might be an entrepreneur. I think I might actually be a businesswoman because I didn't see myself like that.
You had
that.
A business, which is always a good start.
I had a business, which is actually a good start. But so I applied. And the process is you send in your application. And I think it was around December. And I knew the date was coming, that's the day you'd hear. So I had it on my phone in my calendar. And I was kind of like, okay, so this is the day. Well, they're probably not going to call me. But they did. And
what was that like?
It was amazing. It was actually the best Christmas present I'd ever been given because it just set me down a different path. And I was taken on by my mentor. You get a mentor. And my mentor is Marion O'Gorman. So,
and Marion O'Gorman isn't just any Marion O'Gorman. She is just retired from Kilkenny Shops.
She is indeed. And she was a fantastic mentor to me and all the other girls in my group. You usually have a group about 8 to 10 women. And what I would say is it was the support of that network, the support of everyone in that group. And I mean, I'd say to any business owner, regardless of what the group it is, if you have support and people who believe in you, it's fantastic. It's really something that gave me confidence Now, there's a lot of work you have to do. You have to do a lot of work on yourself, a lot of work on your business. You have to look forward. You have to see where you're going. You have to do forecasts and you have to do deep dives. And there's work involved, but it's work for you and your business. And when you have your head down and you're working in your business, sometimes you don't know where you're going because you need to kind of put your head up and look at your business to see where it's heading. Do you know that kind of way? So that's what we did.
Did it change during the program?
Yes.
How?
Well, it gave me confidence and I think that's what I was lacking. And it gave me, like I feel now I could be in a room with people, regardless of whether they have degrees or whether they're running multinationals or whether they're running a small little thatched business, you know, a cottage business, not thatch. And I can, you know, I have something to say and I think I'm confident in that.
And one of those turning points was when you did address one of those meetings in KPMG.
Oh, yes, yes. At the end
you almost forgot.
At the end of the cycle, you are asked, your mentor is asked for one person in the group to stand up and speak.
That's okay. Well, that's live television is what we call that. I have done
My apologies.
I have done that myself. So don't you worry about it at all. I think I've done it three times. So.
That's my mother-in-law. She always gets her head in.
And this also proves that this is live radio, if you want to call it live radio. This is live podcasting. And I'm going to ask Keith not to make sure not to edit that out. We'll keep that
Don't
live.
Edit that, Keith.
Now, back to KPMG.
Yeah, so
how did you end up with KPMG?
Because they are a sponsor of the Going for Growth initiative. So at the end of the cycle, which mine was cycle 10, your mentor has asked for somebody in the group to stand up and just to give an overall account of what we did and how it was. And Marion actually asked me to do it. So that was another big step for me because you're stepping out of your comfort zone. And I've learned that every time you step out of your comfort zone, you grow.
Like doing this podcast.
Like doing this right now. In the end of the day, it is a bit scary, but just do it anyway. Just do it anyway. It's like anything I've ever achieved. I mean, when I left the first client that I was telling you about, the next client I got was actually the Three Arena, the private members clubs in the Three Arena. So it was quite big. It was a quite big client for someone who had just kind of started off. But it's like just stepping out of your comfort zone. I had to go in there to do a small job for the chef. The chef had asked me to go in and do her kitchens. And I looked around this beautiful private members club and I just said, I'd love to be cleaning here.
And is that still run by Victoria Fortune?
It is indeed. Yeah,
Victoria is an old pal of mine, yeah?
Virginia. I know, we're that long away from everybody. But yes, Virginia is still running that. And I think I just went in and thought, how lovely would it be to be working here, to be in here after the concerts and in such a beautiful environment. And I just kind of pestered them a bit. And I kind of said, look, here I am.
Now you say pestered, but you know, if you really pester them, they tell you to pester off.
Yeah, yeah.
So you obviously did it very well. So what do you do? Or just teach somebody listening today of how you might go about that.
Well, literally, I met the general manager, Laura. She was bringing me in to show my staff where to go in the kitchens. And I had a chat with her and we walked around and I said what a beautiful place it was and how wonderfully clean it was and all the rest and who does their cleaning and were they happy. And
that's the ask.
Yes, I just literally asked. And she said, well, you know, we kind of are, but look, we're always looking to partner up with people. And would you like to? I said, well, actually, I said to her, well, would you like me to come in for a meeting? Would you be free to take a meeting with me in relation to us doing the cleaning here? So she said, yeah. Now, we did a good few meetings. It was about 3 or 4 meetings and back and forth. And we got the contract and we've been there ever since. I think we're there about 5-6 years now at this stage. So
that's very, very gorgeous because we now start running into a bit of trouble, do we? As in COVID.
Oh, yes. Well, then, yeah, when one of your best clients is in the entertainment business and COVID hits, that is a problem. But in March when COVID hit, actually, as we all know, level 5, everything closed down. So everything for me, because we weren't in healthcare, everything for me closed. But I am in schools. We do clean a lot of schools, but they also closed in March. So we came to a stage where our whole business was closed and all of our staff were laid off. And
tell
at this stage,
me what that was like. That's
yeah,
a shocker, isn't it?
It is a shocker. And I tell you, I had about a week where I couldn't breathe.
Literally, I'm
literally,
sure.
Yeah. Literally, because it was kind of just prior to the COVID payments, the PUP payments coming in, and I was worried about my staff. At this stage now, I've nearly 50 staff. So I'm worried about how they're going to pay their rent, how we're going to stay afloat as a business, how we're going to survive. Oh, because I didn't mention, my husband came on board with us in 2018. He actually left his job for 25 years in construction and came to work, I was going to say for me, but I better say with me as a director in McLean's Cleaning Services. So we
that's
now,
Neil.
Yeah, that's Neil. So we now have a business that supports our whole family as well. So we need to make it work. So everything closed down and I said, right, let's get over the fact that we can't breathe and we're wondering how are we going to pay our bills. Let's look at how we can pay our bills. So we had been supplying PPE in a small amount because obviously as a cleaning business, you know, you're doing your gloves, you're doing a bit of sanitizer, you're doing not maybe face masks, but like you're doing some sort of PPE. And I had been doing that on a small scale for some clients since 2013. So I just said, look, I have to up the ante here now and pivot or change, or I know everyone hates the word pivot now, it's totally overused. We needed to do something. Yes, we needed to do something and fast, very fast.
So, because now you are an entrepreneur. You see,
yeah,
you're thinking like an entrepreneur and being an entrepreneur.
So what I did was, I mean, I'll have to watch what I say here because I was quite cheeky and these things do. A birdie told me that there was a couple of essential services that needed hand sanitizer and needed some PPE.
Go and name them because right. this is great. This is huge. Actually.
Yes. Well, I was actually told that on Pust we're finding it difficult to get hand sanitizer, and it wasn't just them. It was a lot of the essential services. So, I mean, everyone in the whole world was looking for this. And even the big massive suppliers that I was calling were saying, look, you know, Emma, we can't even get it in. It's coming, but it's on a pallet and it's coming from China and it's taken 6 weeks and whatever. So I knew this just wasn't good enough. So what I did was I got in touch with an Irish producer of hand sanitizer. Well, first of all, I rang on Pust and I said, we got through to procurement. I just literally rang up and I just said, hi, listen, I hear you're looking for hand sanitizer. I can facilitate this. And I was put through and I was put in hold and put through to different people. Eventually got to head of procurement on Pust. And she said to me, so can you get me this? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. Absolutely. So,
and could you?
I could, and I did. So she explained to me what they needed, and I said, right, leave it with me. And I went to the Irish supplier of the hand sanitizer.
Actually, the funniest, because if you went back, what is it, maybe only 4 or 5 years ago before that, you wouldn't have been doing any of this stuff.
No, I wouldn't.
And that's another lesson that people need to understand is you do not have to be a super entrepreneur,
no.
Wonder Woman overnight. You grow into the job, isn't that it?
You absolutely do. You absolutely do. It's nice to have a little bit of cheekiness about you as well. Like, but you do. And you learn as you grow. You just start off, jump in. Because we actually got the Irish supplier to stop, to give the on-post 2 days a week supply. So he would stop what he was doing and he would make hand sanitizer for on-post and their staff. And we all know how amazing they've been. And that they were essential service and needed it. And he recognised that too. So there was
is a nice little segue for me because I did introduce at the very top of the podcast that one of the things that you said to me is that you will not work with a person or an organisation that will not respect your staff. This is a hot topic for you.
It absolutely is, yes. I have to say, this was one of my main, things at the start that I want my staff to know who they're working for, to feel like part of a team. And then when we go in and work in your business, I want you to feel like we are part of your team. And I want my staff to treat you and your staff with respect and vice versa. It's very, very important. And I have let go of things before because of that very reason. But all the clients I have now really do. And I think that's one thing that's happened through COVID. I think that a lot of people are looking at cleaning staff in their company and they're treating them with a much more respect. I don't think it was something that was done intentionally, but they're looking now and realising that whoever's in their building is keeping it hygienic and safe for their staff.
And the same shout out, because you said so to me, is to bus drivers. And I also think that the people in our supermarkets.
Yes, retail, yes.
An exceptional job.
An exceptional job. And they've been working really, really hard in difficult times. Like it's all very well people saying, look, you know, you work for, say, a retailer or you work for on Pust or you're bus driver or you're a cleaning staff and how amazing you are and now you're an essential service provider. But it's scary. You know, it is scary when all of a sudden you're seen as an essential service provider in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, hopefully they won't be coming around again too often.
No, let's hope it doesn't
but
happen.
But you are now bounced back because you were at 55, you're back to 53?
Yeah, I think at the moment we're back up because what we did is we redeployed. So all of the staff that would have worked in the entertainment industry and that could change their hours, because obviously some people can't do that, we were able to redeploy them into schools. So what we did was we actually took on work and we took on a couple of new secondary schools and a couple of new primary schools, and we actually employed 12 new staff. So even during the pandemic, I suppose, we were hiring. And
you are an entrepreneur.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
So what's the big plan? What's next?
Well, I'm happy to scale. So the big plan is to do that, to continue to grow.
And you've learned about scaling from Paula Fitzsimons.
Yes, yes.
And because if you don't scale, she'll beat you.
Yes, yes. It's good. But it's good. It's good to have people who, you know, are saying to you, don't be afraid to do these things. And I'm not afraid to scale. And I've also used 2020 to, on some areas when we were quieter, to put in loads of foundations. So I have, you know, put in more policies and procedures, and I've put in more people that will help me. I really think one of the major things to learn is that you can't bring everything to the table yourself. So you should know your strengths and then just hire people who don't have, you know, who have what you don't have. So I hired a great girl. She's my operations manager in HR, and I have some fantastic team leads and some great supervisors. So all these levels really help you as a business owner. You don't need to know it all. You don't sit there and say, well, I actually don't know how to do my social media. I don't know how to do my HR. How would I manage this? How would I manage that? Employ people to do that. And, you know, this is where you can't have every strength yourself.
And did you learn that on the Going for Growth program?
100%. 100 million%. You know, I mean, Marion, my mentor, she's been instrumental in teaching me that. You know, you don't need to know everything yourself. You just need to employ the right people.
And what did she say to you last night?
Oh, no, Conal, I'll kill
you. Just told me.
I said to her, she's so inspirational to me. And she said to me, well, Emma, you are very inspirational to me. So that's
as cool as.
It is.
So who is your hire in a heartbeat?
Oh, I'm hiring Marion O'Gorman in a heartbeat. And I'm wondering, is she free at the moment?
Well, I'm hearing that she may not have a job at the moment. So.
No, I think that woman has plenty of things in the pipeline. But she can come and work for McLean's Clean Services any day of the week.
Listen, I love that story, Emma. That is just such a great story. And again, it just shows it can be done. And those programs are forever running. I don't know what cycle she's on now. I'm sure it's...
I was cycle 10, so... Could be 12 maybe now at this stage.
And there will be another one and another one.
Oh, there will indeed. There will indeed.
If there's a cycle 13 now, sounds lucky, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'll go back in with my new product. Oh, I never mentioned my new product.
You better mention it.
Yes. I actually, one of the things we did find when
we were... Do you know why you didn't mention it? Because you didn't tell me about it.
Yes. Well, you see...
Live radio, I keep saying.
Live radio. Well, because we were facilitating PPE and we couldn't find a reusable face mask. That was washable and three layers and everything that the CDC wanted and the WHO wanted. We got together with a manufacturer in my local area and we came up with a reusable face mask.
Oh, good for you. Made in Ireland.
It's made here, yes, made here in Dublin.
Yeah.
And we do have it in certain stockists. We have it in Mars Pharmacies and we have it in Quigley's Pharmacies. And we have done B2B. We can brand it with all your branding on it. And we've... sold it to many different companies. We've actually sold it to 13 different companies throughout 13 different European countries.
Get away.
Yes, we have actually.
So you're now
an
exporter.
Well, all of a sudden I'm now an exporter, yes. So it would be great to get it in more stockists. That would be excellent.
Tax exile.
Living in the Caymans.
This is another one of these kind of human dynamos. And that human dynamo in this case is Emma McLean of McLean Cleaning Services. Great name for cleaning service.
It is
McLean.
A great name.
You just probably married into
I'm
that.
I'm married into that name. I'm going to hang on to him.
Okay. Emma, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Oh, you are more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
Looking for the best work-life balance? Why not start your new business life in one of Ireland's beautiful Gaeltacht locations? Údarás na Gaeltachta has created Ireland's biggest digital hub, GTEC. high-speed broadband just for you. Tosail Noah Nachtlat. Your new work life awaits. Find out more at udaross.ie.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favourite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
We always recommend going for awards on That Great Business Show, and in a minute you'll see just why. Our next guest's company has racked up some seriously big wins, including the 2021 Winner World Food Innovation Awards, 2020 Winner Irish Quality Food and Drinks Award Best COVID-19 Response. And in 2018, the founder was Ireland's best young entrepreneur. The man behind the success is Dr. Conor Curley, and his company, Phytofix, is a scientific nutrition product company based in Dundalk. Phytofix creates whole food, plant-based nutrition products and claims extraordinary benefits based on the research and expertise of the founder. Dr. Conor Curley, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Delighted to be here, Conal.
You wanted to be an athlete. What happened?
Yes, I did. I was quite a quick, keen athlete. You know, I played all sports, just like many people in Ireland.
Except for me.
So I played a lot of football or soccer. I played a lot of Gaelic, which is Irish football. I played rugby and basketball really was my favourite sport. And one year for Christmas, would you believe, I got a stepping machine. And that was because I had bad knees. I had dodgy knees. So I was looking to do exercise without impacting my knees. I woke up then, I think, just after Christmas, after trying out my stepper for maybe too long, 60 minutes or so, with paralysis on my left-hand side. And I thought, oh, I've overdone it again. But it didn't go away. And in fact, it got worse. So lo and behold, 8 months later, with three attacks similar to this, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, age 15. So multiple sclerosis is a chronic, which means it can't be cured. Degenerative, which means it generally gets worse. Disease of the central nervous system. So affecting your brain and spinal cord.
And it's changed your life in so many ways, but in particular, it's made you go into business directly or indirectly.
Yeah, maybe a little bit indirectly, I would say. So as I say, you know, I lost a little bit of power, a little bit of function in my limbs, which gradually returned, but not to the same extent. So my dream of being an MBA star didn't quite come to fruition. But, you know, I then became more interested in my health and particularly in nutrition and how nutrition affects our health. So I studied dietetics at Trinity College in Dublin, and then I did my doctorate with the UCD School of Medicine. That's University College Dublin. Then I worked all around of Ireland and also America and Australia before returning home, really with the goal of setting up a company based on my own experience, my own expertise.
And I was reading and talking to you, but I was also reading your backstory. You have lived frugally to make the dream come true.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, they talk about in business the lean model. This has absolutely been lean. So, you know, keeping track of every single expenditure and every single intake. And, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, I guess being a student for about 11 or 12 years probably has stood to me.
Because the ambitions that you have are truly world. You have something you believe, I don't know, but I will believe in you, is world beating.
Absolutely. And, you know, winning the World Food Innovation Award really kind of emphasizes that. But we're just a brand new company. We only launched in November of 2020. So we're very, very new to all of this. My background is in the clinic and in the lab. And really, I felt that as a clinician, I was seeing maybe 100 people a year and really helped them change their lifestyle, their diet. And that was phenomenal. But, you know, I always wanted more. How is it going to help 1,000 people or 10,000 people? Or, you know what, maybe 10 million people. And I think a really nice way to do that is with, you know, scientifically backed nutrition products.
And such as?
So our first product is called ImmuneFix. It's purely for immune health and energy levels. But this time last year, we actually were meant to do clinical research on our blood pressure and blood sugar products. Unfortunately, we spent about 18 months gearing up towards that, and then COVID-19 hit. So everybody has a COVID story, right? So our COVID story is our research got cancelled overnight. And this caused us to move away from metabolic disease like blood pressure and blood sugar, more into immune health. But we certainly will be revisiting our metabolic products as soon as possible. And I have a big interest in brain health because of my own interests, my own issues with my MS. So we will certainly be looking at brain issues as soon as possible as well.
Now, anybody who would know me and who knows the background of how I like to operate, and particularly on That Great Business Show, we only bring in people that I think have the genuine, are the genuine article. And obviously you have your stripes. You are Trinity XUCD. You are Dr. Conor Curley. So in theory, you should know what you're talking about. So what are the claims that you are making?
Yeah, so we have three European Food Safety Authority health claims for our existing product, and they are to help support immune function, to help reduce tiredness and fatigue, and also to reduce oxidative stress. Now, many people won't have heard of oxidative stress. The first two are quite simple, but the third one, so I always just explain to my patients, if you have an apple and you take a bite of it, after maybe 5 minutes, it starts to go brown, and that's the oxygen damaging the apple. The two ways to prevent that are to not bite the apple and open it up to oxygen in the first place, or to prevent it getting oxygen at all. And the same goes for the human body. So the two ways that humans can prevent oxidative damage are, number one, not to breathe oxygen, which isn't very feasible, or number two, to eat a diet rich in antioxidants. And we know that in today's modern world, when we're surrounded by things like pollution, we're maybe not getting as much exercise as we should, we're maybe getting a little bit too much stress, and we're maybe not eating the healthy foods as much as we could, then oxidative stress really contributes to pretty much every disease known to man, as well as just aging. So we know that aging is related to oxidative stress.
Do you make any claims about your own MS, about the way that you have tried to, obviously you cannot cure it, but control it?
Yeah, so not specific to the product, but I think healthy lifestyle is absolutely fundamental for MS, but also for everybody with any condition and for anybody without a condition. I think healthy living is so important, and it doesn't have to be complicated, doesn't have to be difficult, and doesn't have to be expensive.
And I was going to say, I suppose that if the alternative is unhealthy living, well, that kind of makes a statement in its own right anyway, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. We know by default that, you know, and it's kind of a paradox that COVID-19 has led to people being more healthy in theory, but yet queues of McDonald's and queues at off licenses have increased. And, you know, we're seeking a little bit of comfort, so it makes sense. And also we're unsure of what the future holds, and we're seeking comfort foods, so it does make sense.
You're not alone in, is it correctly called nutraceuticals, or is that the sector?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not alone in that industry at all anymore. It's massive and growing at an enormously fast rate. How are you going to make yours stand out, your products, plural, stand out? And how do you bring it internationally?
Absolutely. Two very good questions. So what we want to do is we want to do clinical research on our products as soon as possible. Unfortunately, COVID-19 has just really put that on hold. But as soon as possible, we had everything lined up. We had our clinical partners. We had our products ready to go, regulatory approval. It's a very long, very expensive process, and it didn't come to fruition, but it certainly will as soon as it's feasible. So what's going to be different is our products will actually be proven to, for example, lower blood pressure, lower blood sugar, improve immunity, etc.
Money. You just said it's very expensive. And you previously told me that you live on fresh air, but you don't breathe it.
Yeah, to prevent that oxidative stress, right? So look, this is, starting a business, it's crazy. If you had told me 5 years ago I'd be starting a business, I wouldn't have believed you. But here we are, and it's been full of learnings. Unfortunately, the funding landscape is not familiar to me. It's very daunting, and also it's very difficult, especially in these times. We see the big companies are getting bigger and the small companies are kind of struggling to an extent. So I've pumped my entire life savings into this business, and we have been supported by the Loud Local Enterprise Office as well as Enterprise Ireland through their New Frontiers Accelerator Programme. So if there's any young entrepreneurs or any budding entrepreneurs, I would definitely recommend to check out their local enterprise office as a first port of call.
I thought you were going to look for any budding investors. I presume you're on the lookout, are you?
Absolutely. So right now, there's a couple of things that we need, and a couple of hurdles that we need to navigate, including our packaging, and then we'll be ready to scale, you know, quite quickly. And then we'll need some cash, some serious cash.
And it's interesting, you and I had an off-air chat about the packaging. Explain some of the issues.
Yeah, so we launched with a recyclable glass jar, which is really, really nice. It's really sustainable, etc. But unfortunately,
it breaks.
It does break, but also it's expensive. But we're willing to pay a premium for the best product. But unfortunately, it's really heavy, so it's really expensive to ship. And finally, it's really difficult to work within the factory. So if any listeners out there have any expertise regarding packaging, we'd love to hear from them.
Joe Brown of Joe Brown Skincare, she has bamboo packaging. Does yours need to be non-breathable, or what does it need to be?
Yeah, it would need to be non-breathable, airtight, absolutely. And it would need to have a seal as well, but certainly nothing complex. It's just our packaging sources have dried up because of supply chain issues related to a combination, a deadly combination of COVID and Brexit.
So that's the first call out. So what else do you need?
What else do we need?
I was going to say pound notes. Do you need pound euros? Do you need euro notes? Lots of them.
We need lots of euro notes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really key for a small business. Money is great, of course, but mentorship as well. So if there's anybody listening who's been there, done that.
I'll be asking you about the heartbeat stuff in a second. But before that, are you looking, like, you've got the brains and you've also got access to the brains within either Trinity or UCD or probably all over the world, because it's a small cohort of people who would work within your area. So you can call on their knowledge, I presume. Is there much rivalry there? Do you share?
Academically, there is quite a bit of a rivalry, but in the commercial world, absolutely. So, you know, things, people are very secretive about, you know, their formulas, what they're working on, et cetera. But, you know, as I said, that's my forte. We have a whole ream of products in the pipeline. We're not so concerned about that. We're concerned about the other stuff, the business development, the marketing.
There's a lad called Dennis Brosnan. Did you ever hear him?
I did. Yeah. I've heard of Dennis, yes.
And Dennis Brosnan was the big brains behind the huge expansion of Kerry Group. He'd be the kind of lad now that might be the very person that you'd need.
He may well be. And if Dennis is listening, we'd love to talk to you.
So that is the kind of person that you're looking for. And what about, I presume again, that you can go worldwide, except, and I've learned this over the years, yeah, run into, maybe correctly, into regulators. What's good for the EU is not good for the UK anymore. What's good in the UK is no good for the FDA. And what the FDA is good for is certainly no good down in South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, the regulatory framework is really, really complex and it's changeable. Brexit just emphasizes that. So yeah, absolutely. Our product right now is gold stamped in Europe. We're working on regulations for America and Canada, and then the UK will be the next.
Sell me the dream, because you obviously look at a lot of this stuff, and I think that you chat about a lot of this stuff, is what you believe maybe, we'll test it to see if it happens, may be possible using the kinds of foods that you're trying to formulate.
Yeah, so I mean, look, the end goal here is really to have a company based in Ireland which has multiple products for multiple conditions with multiple research studies behind them, available via in retail pharmacies all over the world as well as via e-commerce.
What kind of conditions do you think, did you actually believe, like, again, I emphasize that you will put them through proper rigorous testing, but what do you think that you might be able to, maybe not cure, but put on hold in the future?
So I have a huge amount of expertise in blood pressure. In fact, a lot of my research was got to do with a molecule called nitric oxide. The Nobel Prize was awarded for nitric oxide in 1998. Sorry, I should say nitric oxide discovery in 1998. Now, not by me. I was only about 7 years old at that stage. This molecule basically makes your blood vessels bigger. And as I explained to my patients, if you can make your blood vessels bigger, it means you can get more blood flowing and the heart doesn't have to work any harder. So that's what a lot of my research focused on, was nitric oxide. And we used to do it with about 100 mils of juice. And now we think we can do it with about a 500 milligram or half a gram tablet. And that's what's really interesting for us. So blood pressure is certainly of interest. The second one, which we had
just on that one, this is gorgeous. This is exactly what I was hoping to hear. My jaw, I have to push it back up again. Wow.
Absolutely,
could be huge.
It could absolutely be huge. So I think there's about 1.4 billion people with high blood pressure in the world.
And why isn't there a queue outside your front door up in Louth waiting to invest in you?
It's on the QT for the moment because we've just told them. Well, and it will go worldwide absolutely via this podcast. But the problem is we haven't proven this in a research study.
I appreciate that. How long would it take to see whether, forget about COVID, say COVID is gone tomorrow, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years?
Well, during my PhD, which was 4 years, we did about 25 research studies. So I'm really a go-getter. I like to get things done. And, you know, that was the plan for this company, was to go in and do these products, these trials. So, for example, we did our initial blood pressure studies we did took hours. So we could see a blood pressure reduction within hours. Then the gold standard was getting people to wear a blood pressure monitor for 24 hours. And we did that for a week. So people took the juice for a week. we think we can prove that with our product in a week on really high level stuff. Then what's even more interesting is our blood sugar product, which we think will lower blood pressure after a single meal. So in other words, Conal, if you and I nip out and go to McDonald's and have a Coke and a Big Mac right now, we'll measure our blood sugar in 2 hours. There'll be a big spike. But if we do it tomorrow, in the exact same circumstances, have that Big Mac and Coke with our product, we think it will be much lower tomorrow than it is today. Now, that's very interesting.
McDonald's should be investing in you.
Maybe, yeah, we can incorporate it into Big Macs. But I think that's really, really exciting because, you know, again, there's almost 1 billion people with diabetes in the world. And we know there's similar numbers who have pre-diabetes.
Okay, keep going. I love this stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely amazing. So I'll just go on to the brain one then.
Yeah.
Because the brain is absolutely fascinating for many, many reasons.
And Keith Starrs has to look at watch this one. He's Sandman Keith Starrs is just jaw-dropped here.
So what happens with the brain is the brain has a lot of fat in there. And we know that if we leave, for example, vegetable oil on the table overnight, which is obviously full of fat, it starts to go rancid. So we keep it in the fridge or we keep a lid on it. Unfortunately, the brain doesn't have that same capacity. It has what we call the blood-brain barrier. This stops things getting into the brain, but it also stops things getting out of the brain. So again, if we go and have, let's say, a fruit salad, all of those nutrients will be absorbed and they'll circulate around the body. They'll end up in our big toe. They'll end up in our intestines. They'll end up, you know, all over our body. But most of those nutrients will never reach the brain. Meaning the brain, which again is full of fat, full of metabolic activity, about 60% of oxygen is used inside the brain. And what happens is over time, the brain can get damaged. And this leads to things like dementia, Parkinson's, MS, etc., etc. What we can do is we have identified about 19 nutrition compounds, which we know can penetrate this blood-brain barrier and thereby decrease oxidative stress, which we talked about again, you'll remember the apple, and also inflammation directly inside the brain and the spinal cord. And what's more, we can measure that. So I was lucky enough at age 15 to have a spinal tap or a lumbar puncture where they stick a 6-inch needle into your spinal to get some, into your spine to get some fluid from the inside of your spine. So we can actually measure it directly in that. Now, that is a big claim I've just said in the last paragraph or so, but this is absolutely where my biggest passion is, because if this works, then theoretically we can absolutely help people maintain brain health for their entire lives. And that would be absolutely phenomenal.
I'm listening to this and I'm just wondering, I'll ask the same question that I asked before. Where is the queue of investors? If people believe in you, and again, you're not pie in the sky, you're real.
Yeah.
Somebody had to award you your PhD.
Absolutely, yeah.
How much money do you need? Can I help? Can I get in?
How many zeros can we fit on the page?
How much do you need?
So it depends. Right now, we're going step by step. So as I say, we had a strategy in mind that we were going to run lean and do our blood pressure and blood sugar, and then the brain was going to come down the line. Though that plan went out the window, and the same as many people, I'm sure, around the world. April for me last year, this time 12 months ago, was absolute panic stations. My future was in absolute tatters. But we pivoted and we survived and we learned a lot. So now I've done a lot of the donkey work. I've done a lot of the hard work. I've brought a product from concept to the market. The when I get back to the clinic, that's what I like and that's what I'm good at and that's what I'm really excited about. That will happen. But in the meantime, it's about continuing to learn and hopefully scaling what we have currently.
How much money can I invest?
So again, how long is a piece of string?
If somebody came along tomorrow and gave you a couple of hundred million, I'm not talking about small money, a couple of hundred million, and COVID goes, because COVID hopefully will go, like you, if you can prove all the above.
Absolutely.
You're talking mega.
It really has huge potential. And that's why, you know, it's been step by step, you know, learnings and not telling people, you know, my ideas down the pub and explaining everything and so on.
You've just told everybody on this.
But I haven't given away any of our secret sauces. And in fact, the secret sauce is all based on my own know-how. So hopefully I don't have any car accidents on the way home.
I was going to say, is it a genuine question? Have you got that written down somewhere?
Absolutely. That's absolutely. Okay. But I can't tell you where.
No, that's okay. I won't ask you that just in case. It might slip out. But I might follow you home. The final question we always ask is the heart in a heartbeat. I could just think of 100 people that you need to hire immediately. Who would be 1, 2 or number 3, whichever of your heart in a heartbeat?
Absolutely. So number one has to be Professor Luke O'Neill. He's really been all over the airways here in Ireland throughout COVID-19. But in fact, he's a really famous scientist and a really excellent scientist, regardless, even before COVID. What's really interesting about Luke is he's a really nice guy. He's a really smart guy, obviously, but he's a really funny guy, a fun guy to be around. And finally, he has a lot of research experience and now some more commercial experience.
He's got a load of cash.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's what he has.
Absolutely. So he dogged it out in academia for a long time. So I certainly wouldn't begrudge him.
Nobody begrudges in this program. We are pro business, and if you make it, you make it, and you're smart and well done. Your own graft. What a story! That is fantastic. So next thing post COVID is when it all kicks off, really, is it?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's when it really gets going. But for now, we have products which we know work, and we're developing new products which we're going to bring out.
And you want in to the pharmacies and where else? Who do you want to open the doors to you?
Yeah, so right now we're in about 10 pharmacies. We think, you know, there's a lot more pharmacies around Ireland.
There's about a million around the world.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're going to start in Ireland and EU. We're also in some discussions with UK. And from there, I mean, everybody in the world has an immune system, right? So
you need to talk to our sponsor, Tom Murphy of Pamex, the number one real distributor to all of the pharmacies. I will make it my business after this podcast to get you and he in contact, and he will do his damnedest for you, I can assure you. Great, great, great guy.
I look forward to speaking to Tom.
Connor Curley of Vitafix, thank you so much. I should have said Dr. Connor, because we like class. Connor, thank you so much.
I've been called an awful lot worse, but if anybody is interested, our name is Vitafix. So fight meaning plant, and that's spelled Phytafix. So Vitafix.
You know, they say when you're explaining, you're losing. You have to get an easier name than that. Call yourselves Curly Foods or something. Or Curly Pills.
Perhaps.
Very good. Connor, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 30. Our sound pilot today was, as usual, Captain Keith Stars. Air Commodore Peter Rice will sprinkle some rocket fuel on us later, making us unquestionably the best sounding podcast by far. This week's shout-outs are for Twitter, because that's where I saw the Linen Shirt Company, I think, and that's where I also saw an ad for the NDRC giving away all of that cash and the help from the mentors. Emma McLean found us through our very active LinkedIn website, which we're now populating with helpful business hints and insights. You should go there. And I think it's Gillian Daly who sent us Dr. Connor and his amazing tale. With us to you all. If you want to be featured on That Great Business Show, send your details to us via the website thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And if you'd like to advertise on Ireland's best business podcast, email producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com and let's talk. Finally, our thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shave. Try their world's best shaving oil for just a week and you'll be a convert. You'll never go back to yucky, polluting and potentially carcinogenic shaving foam. Buy it, use it and see how smooth it makes you feel. So from me, a very smooth Conal O'Moran, we will talk again next week on That Great Business Show, Slán Tomhle.